The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Mark Mix is with me now. He's the president of the National Right to Work Committee. 2.8 million members. That is not small. 2.8 million member public policy organization. Serves as also president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. And gosh, you've been doing this, what, 20-something years here? How you doing this morning, Mark? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Bill, and good morning to you. I know it's a little earlier there than it is here, so thanks for being around, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. I've been doing this actually for 38 years and defending individual freedom and liberty in the workplace, and hopefully got a few more years left in me, so we'll see.
All right. I wanted to give you a little bit of good news coming out of the state of Oregon, because normally every time that I talk to you about Oregon, it's like I'm just crying about how miserable the communists have done us, okay, that kind of thing. But I don't know if you heard, but Governor Tina Kotek, end of last year, ended up putting out a executive order to have a PLA, or a project labor agreement, on most state projects, which was a giveaway to her union buddies. You understand how that goes. Unions really control a lot of Oregon politics here. And a state judge ended up blocking that, so they're not able to do it. Says she did not have the authority to require everybody to be in a union to get on these state contracts. I just thought I should let you know that.
Well, that is good news, Bill, because those agreements, those union-only construction agreements, usually cost taxpayers a significant amount more than it would normally if you had open competition where merit shop contractors could bid on jobs too and put local people to work. I mean, that's really a big deal, and the fact that a judge would rule that, I suppose she might be appealing that, but for now, that's really good news.
Yeah, indeed it is, and it also saves the taxpayer money and doesn't necessarily reward her friends, and I know that's the whole political game here. Speaking of the political friends and what's really going on, we had a Congresswoman Kiggins' office saying the other day that that unions were paying phony protesters to put on fake town halls in responding to all of Trump's mass layoffs. And I've had Congress critters there like Cliff Benson and others that are just talking about that it seems obvious that there are people being paid, kind of a rent-a-mob, that will go from town hall to town hall to town hall that are not the standard constituency. And, you know, how do you see this? Is this a part of the deep state once again, or, you know, D.C.'s immune system kind of?
Yeah, Bill, it is. I mean, remember, I think it was Chuck Schumer last week, and I don't know the exact day, but he made the quote, but he actually said, we're sending people out to these swing districts across the country, and they're going to do exactly what happened in Jan Kagan's district in Virginia, is put on these, you know, pseudo town halls. You call them rent. I call them rent riots, and that's generally what they are. Obviously, there may be some legitimacy to some of these town halls because people do want to talk to their members of Congress. But the idea that, you know, it's designed to create a television moment, their 15 seconds of fame, there's no question this stuff is organized in many instances.
Yeah, sure. And it's interesting. I've also noticed that ever since DOGE started doing its thing and there's talk about closing agencies or scaling them back, and heck, we even had some group here in Oregon calling itself Oregonians for Democracy attacking our particular congressman, saying that he was telling people to screw their health care or something like that. You know, and of course, he never made that statement, but you know how political advertising goes, right? You can say just about anything you want.
Yeah, that's right. If you get your 15 seconds, you've accomplished your goal, and that is creating a news story that probably has nothing to do with reality. Unfortunately, union officials are behind all of this because, you know, Bill, this is where their strength is. The government union structure is really kind of the final frontier for organized labor. Almost half of all union members in the country today are government employees. And so the idea that someone picked up the hood on an automobile and said, let's take a look at what's going on inside the engine of the car, as opposed to just looking how shiny and a nice paint job it's got when it comes to government activity, we're finally getting to the point where taxpayers up to, whether it be in your state.
Hey, could you reposition your phone a little bit there, Mark? I'm losing you. Could you repeat that last statement there? I just lost your phone a little bit.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, if that's better, I apologize.
That's okay.
You know, basically what you got is you've got people saying, okay, let's put the hood up on this automobile and take a look at what's under the hood. And we're finding out that government expenditures and government activity is found wanting when it comes to fraud, abuse, and just waste. And so whether it's be in Oregon of your state or here in Washington, D.C., I think we're getting a really good look, finally, at what's happening in Washington. We know there's reform that can be done, and you don't have to hurt anybody to reduce the size and scale of government and basically what they're doing. And that's what's happening right now. And the unions are very scared about that because half their membership are government employees, whether it be in the federal government or state government.
So reducing government employees would then inherently reduce union representation, too. So, yeah, they're going to react to this. Mark Mix is the president of the National Right to Work Committee. Where do you think these labor and union policies will be going in this particular administration? Because I've received mixed messages from the Trump administration, in my view. To have Lori Chavez Dreamer from Oregon being the labor secretary, and I mean, we're talking about a union suck up if there ever was one. That one is one that I kind of question here. But yet I have the feeling that President Trump was trying to also reward some of his union supporters. That was that. What was it? One of the auto workers unions. Was that what it was? Sean or something. Sean was his name, if I recall correctly, was involved in a lot of this.
Yeah. Sean O'Brien.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Where do you see us? Because, the freedom to not have to join a union is a big, big deal. And so we have even people within the Trump administration that I'm not exactly quite so sure about. What say you?
Yeah. Well, the Secretary of Labor issue was a significant one. And the idea is, Bill, to your point, I mean, he was paying off what he, I guess, considered rank-and-file union members who voted for him. Mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly, private sector union households voted, I think, and Sean O'Brien admitted publicly that 62% of his Teamster members were supporting Donald Trump. So he did the courageous thing and not endorse anybody, which I find kind of interesting to be rewarded for not endorsing anybody.
Right,
but then
right.
Again, that's the politics of D.C.
Well, better to not endorse anybody than to be openly hostile, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, well... that's right. That's true. But most of organized labor unions and their leadership, and that's the important difference because there's a distinction between rank and file workers and the leadership for sure, politically. Most of the rank and file workers were on one side and the union officials on the other. You know, Lori Chavez Dreamer, to your point, Bill, one of the first meetings she had when she was finally confirmed as Secretary of Labor, she went to the Teamsters headquarters and she's shown with a T-shirt that says Teamsters versus everybody.
Oh,
and
boy.
I got to tell you that. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. She's allegedly working for everybody, but here we are.
All right. Would you say then that the possibility for labor reform is little to nil or kind of still an open question? What say you?
Well, yeah, I think it's still an open question. The Department of Labor has lots of things that happened during the Biden administration that probably should be repealed. We'll see if the Trump administration is going to help her along in this process of reducing regulation, decreasing union power, whether it be over apprenticeship programs or whatever it is that they have been getting aid and taxpayer money for over the years. And then there's certainly the pensions. Though a lot of story that goes unreported is the taxpayers bailed out the Teamster pension program to the tune of $45 billion, basically making private pensions whole because of mismanagement, corruption, et cetera. Huh. These are issues. There's still $20 billion of taxpayer money sitting at the Department of Labor right now. We'll see if she does anything about that. We'll see if she does anything about the apprenticeship programs that primarily empower union officials when it comes to federal money for training and those types of things. So there's lots there that she can make a difference on. We'll see if she has the courage to do that.
I have little problem with a private sector union. I mean, not that I'm a fan of it, but at least, you know, it is your right as a private citizen. Where I really draw the line, though, is the public employee union, because as we can see here in Oregon, you never have an honest broker or arm's length arrangement, because you have politicians negotiating with people who ended up donating to their campaigns. And so you're not negotiating with anyone trying to look out for the taxpayers. That's my real issue with it. I imagine is that for you, too.
Absolutely. You got it right. And frankly, Bill, we're in good company. Franklin Roosevelt said the same thing back in the 1930s when asked about unionizing government employees. He said it's unthinkable. It's not the same. But yet here we are where 50% of all union members in the country are government employees. It really is kind of the final frontier for them. That's where you know, the oil pot continues to fill on its own, allegedly. In the private sector, there's consequences to doing things like union officials do. And you're right, in the outset, you talked about you're negotiating with people you elected. You can elect your own boss. That's not a good model for taxpayers or citizens or anybody, frankly, except union officials.
Mark, you're doing lots of work here to fight for proper policies in these labor worlds here. Where can people find out more about National Right to Work? Where you go?
Yeah, Bill, if they're interested in their legal rights in the workplace, they can go to the foundation's website, which was nrtw.org. If they're interested in what's going on legislatively, whether it be in Oregon or Washington or California or Washington, D.C., they can go to the committee's website at NRTWC, National Right to Work Committee. org, and find information in both those places.
Very good. You know, Mark, I am aware of some people working in our local hospitals. We just had a big, long strike here with the Oregon Nurses Association, and there were people that confided in me that they're looking to decertify the union, and at least people are reaching out to you. So I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but I'm getting reports about that here in Southern Oregon. So I thought you'd like to know that.
Okay. Yeah, indeed, Bill. We're getting lots of nurses from around the country, from the Mayo Clinics in Minnesota and across the country. Nurses are reaching out, and we're hearing from a lot of them for sure. So thanks for that.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. I know you're on the freeway or on the shoulder, but get back to work, okay? We'll talk to you a little bit later, okay?
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. Yeah. I'm glad he pulled over, though. I'm glad. Some people have tried to conduct the interview, a quick talk with someone while they're actually on the road driving, and that's not always the best way of going about it, but Mark was smart. 722 at KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show. 770-5633 if you wanted to check in on anything we've been talking about so far.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than...
Service where we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
770-5633. And you can join the conversation or get something going if you wish. Well, it looks like The Atlantic has released the entire Signal chat. The whole thing. They've released the whole transcript of that. So we'll get a chance to dig into that. I don't have time to take a look at that right now. But needless to say, the hissy fit and the Democrats that are so concerned about national security, who had a husk running national security for a number of years that they never wanted anybody to take a look at, they'll have more to squawk about as we have new chat details revealed. But I think we also have to remember that this is also part, as much of an amateur situation as talking on a Signal app. You know, an app that any doofus can get on Google Play or the Apple Store, you know, that kind of thing. It's like that's a real amateur deal in the first place. I know Waltz is falling on his sword over it. So still, as amateurish as that really is, we have to be honest with ourselves on this one. You know that a lot of the criticism is going to come from the people who just want to take out the Trump administration's people. That's what this is really all about. We have to understand it. So that's why the Trump administration people have to be smarter and do better on certain things. And I'm surprised that that Tulsi Gabbard and Pete Hegseth and all the rest of them wouldn't have been. We're doing this on our cell phones, right? We're doing this on our cell phones, on the Signal app, on our cell phones. Really? Is this kosher to be having these kind of government conversations, deep government conversations, on a cell phone messaging app that the NSA has no doubtedly already hacked? See what I'm getting at? That sort of thing. And given that the NSA would love to probably take out a lot of the people in the Trump administration, taking them out politically. Of course, I hope they don't want to take them out physically, but you know how that goes. JFK. All right. But I digress. There is a lot of incoming arrows, and so we have to be pretty smart about that, I would figure, huh? There's another interesting story, and this one came at me kind of out of left field. Well, I don't know if it's left field, but it was on Military Times this morning. Lawmaker aims to protect troops from squatters. Some service members have experienced difficulties getting trespassers out of their homes because of state laws protecting squatters. Military Times reporting that service members shouldn't have to deal with squatters who illegally take over their homes during their absence And said this one lawmaker who has proposed a law to make it easier for troops to remove the intruders. The measure would amend the Service Members Civil Relief Act to protect troops from state laws that give rights to squatters who take over their homes. Representative Brian Mast, a Republican from Florida, says, "I can't think of many things worse than finally coming home after a tour of duty, only to find a trespasser camped out." This is an announcement that he made yesterday when he introduced the legislation. He says there's plenty to worry about when you get home. Evicting someone shouldn't be on the list. "My bill defends service members, puts their interests first, and stops government protection for squatters invading their homes," added Mast, who is an Army veteran. According to Mast's proposed bill, any state law that gives rights to squatters would not apply to premises owned by service members and occupied by squatters during homeowners' period of military service. Now, we've all heard about and even read about them, and you see news reports about it, in which you essentially have racketeers, bums, drug gangs, all the various other things taking over homes. We've seen that in all states. All states have had these situations. People show up, and then the sheriff says, well, there's nothing I could do about it because of state law. But the question I would have for you this morning, if Representative Brian Mast, a Republican from Florida, can come up with a bill that he claims would protect military troops from squatters, why could he not come up with a bill that protected all Americans from squatters? Countermanding these state laws that say that, the island of misfit criminals shows up and takes over your house and, gosh, we're really sorry, but, you're going to have to go through the legal system to do this. How about something really simple? How about something really simple nationwide that if you don't own the property, you don't control it? And all you have to do is prove that you own the property and that you have a legal rental agreement. If you are, a rental. Why would you want to do something? Why would you want to take the power of the federal government and do it to fix the problems of only one relatively small class of person out there? And hey, I think there should be laws protecting people against squatters if they're military veterans. I think there should be laws protecting people from squatters who are just Americans, who are supposed to be here, and it's their property. Isn't that where this needs to go? It's kind of like the same sort of thing like, every time we have to do something right, it has to be done for first responders, because only police and firefighters are good people. All the rest of us, we're not to be concerned with. You see where I'm coming from on this? This is something. So it's almost I'm thinking about writing him and saying, okay, it's not enough to protect the military people. It's what needs to be happening is to protect Americans, to protect citizens, to protect people who belong here, to protect people who have title to the property, right? All this thing about someone takes over your house and you can't do anything about it because it's a civil matter. Bullshit. It's my take, 732 at KMED. Mr. Outdoors, special version of the Outdoor Report, this time for the sporty weather we could be having. We'll talk with him in a few.
Do you take safe drinking water for granted? If you
power grab, Bill London, KMED.
735, Sherm's here. Hey, Sherm, you wanted to talk and bite a little bit on the Signal story, the chat on the secure app. Well, not so secure app if you talk to the people in the know. What do you say about that, huh?
Well, I worked for NSASPD in Europe, National Security Agency Special Projects Division Europe, a place called Wild Boar.
Okay.
And so I do know a little about security. Fortunately, we didn't have the internet with all those places that information could be accidentally sent. We only had circuits back in those days. But yes, I worked way above top secret stuff. And furthermore, we monitored everything around the project. People watched each other. None of us would have considered in any way even speaking about what we did on the job, other than we worked at Wild Boar.
Yeah. Now, what are your thoughts, though? You know that a lot of this, I think, part of this is an engineered attack on the Trump administration. We have to understand that this is the, if you want to call it deep state or just the administrative state, the immune system reacting and going to try to attack any way that it can. But to me, it was kind of an amateurish thing to do any kind of pretty deep involved chat on a phone app. Do you agree with me on that?
Well, I don't know about that from that perspective, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I will tell you, on these highly classified documents and things, it only takes one person to compromise the whole operation. And by the way, that's what happened to Wild Boar. One guy got involved. This is a true story. Look it up.
Uh-huh.
Got involved. The Russians set him up with a woman.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Prime, and it destroyed a $1 billion project. That was years after I was there. But I will tell you, we watched when I was there everything. No one would consider discussing anything out of that project. My ex-wife never knew what I did.
What about when you actually had to talk amongst yourselves? If you had to do a conference on phone, how did you do it? Now, you didn't have cell phones back in your day at that point, but what did you do?
Oh, we would never talk about the project outside the project unless it was on a circuit. Encrypted.
When you say, okay, so an encrypted, you would use encrypted government phones, in other words, to do this, right?
Well, we actually, the only thing we talked about is non-classified information on the phone. Yes, I did have a direct line to the Pentagon, et cetera, yes.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't discuss anything, even then, classified. We're very cautious. It was only to coordinate.
And it would sound that if there is going to be any real conversation about something, you're not doing it on a chat. What you're probably doing it is in a meeting, face-to-face, right?
Absolutely not. On the red line, it was simply coordinating what we're doing.
All right. Very good. Hey, Sherm, appreciate you giving me your experience about that. Yeah. I know that some are saying this this story is going to be over, and it may blow over at some point. But it is, I think, a coordinated attack on one hand, but on the other, but we also... We, meaning the Trump administration, also, I think, did not do the right thing by using this app in the first place. So we kind of invited it, I think. I hope I'm wrong. 738 at KMED. Mr. Outdoors, he's next.
Millette Construction has been a general contractor for
Paul Strandberg with Valley View Nursery, and I'm on KMED.
Boy, I'll bet Paul's busy this time of year. People getting ready to grow their goodies, huh? 19 before 8. Mr. Outdoors, keeping an eye on, well, the outdoors when it comes to the weather this time, because we could be having some sporty weather, and RogueWeather.com has been reporting a bunch of this. So what's the lay of our weather land right now? It's such a pretty morning. I'm looking at one contrail. People in Ashland say it's a chemtrail going above me, but I'm looking at one contrail here in sunny skies. It looks awfully nice right now, Greg. What do you say?
You know, ironically, that's exactly the kind of setup you have when you see some of the most violent, severe weather happen.
Oh.
It was a beautiful morning. I mean, we had no idea anything like this was going to happen. There was no indication. It was such a beautiful day. And then all of a sudden, everything just exploded. And, you know, you don't see that set up here in Oregon or Washington. I mean, almost never. It's really, really rare to see a true Midwest-style setup for severe weather.
Oh, so we're talking about kind of like Fargo-Moorhead weather that I would experience in which the wind blows and the lightning's crazy and the hail comes down like golf balls, you know, that kind of stuff. Are we looking at stuff like that today in some areas of Oregon?
We definitely are, and in fact, you know, I got up to get ready to do this, and I was looking at what Storm Prediction Center had out for this morning, because when you reach the day of an expected event, things always will take a turn one way or the other.
Sure.
They may decide, oh, well, we overdid it, or no, actually, this is now looking worse than what we thought it was going to. And today for Oregon and Washington, it definitely went into that. This is going to be worse than what we were expecting it to, because last night when I did a special live on Rogue Weather, we had a really rare to see 2% chance for a tornado to happen today from Cottage Grove to Seattle. And then early this morning, Storm Prediction Center raised that from Eugene to Olympia to a 5% chance.
Okay. So we're starting to get a little higher. Inching. Before. Okay. Inching upward then.
I've never seen a 5% chance for a tornado anywhere in Oregon and Washington out of Storm Prediction Center ahead of event.
Oh, okay. So 5% is actually a big deal, because I would hear a 5% chance of a tornado and think, okay, that means there's a 95% of it not happening. A 95% chance of it not happening.
And that's exactly the way you need to look at it. But for Oregon and Washington, where we average 3 tornadoes a year, whether the majority of people know that or not, but where we average 3 tornadoes a year, we typically are not ever even seeing a 5% chance.
Right.
Put it this way. A lot of what I gained by way of weather knowledge that I share with this audience, that I share with everybody who follows us on Rogue Weather, a lot of that was gained through a dedicated severe storm study program through the University of Oklahoma. And everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people and a lot of my family would go, well, that's a tremendous waste of time and money on things that never happen in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do. And National Weather Service, back in the day, wanted to train up as many people to as high a level as they could get without them being meteorologists, just for that reason. They needed people in the field who could communicate accurate ground truth information.
Well, yeah, who could actually talk to the meteorologists and you could communicate well, rather than I'm looking at a puffy cloud here. You know, you need to know the terminology. You need to be able to. Yeah.
And you needed to know exactly what you were looking at for structure.
Sure.
Because looking at how the storm is built, what you can see, there's all kinds of visual things. Back in 1995 and 96, this was all still relatively new. And I've been storm chasing since 1986 in Oregon. Now, of course, people watch this happen all the time following whatever their favorite YouTube guy is, whether that's Reed Timmer or Ryan Hall or whoever else. That wasn't the case back in the day. So now we're getting the exact kind of situation I got trained for back in the 1990s, and I'll tell you what, I'm not kidding. I put a post up just a few minutes ago. I said, if somebody would Venmo me gas money, I absolutely would go chase today in the Willamette Valley. Because
you think that, so you're thinking the Portland area is going to take the brunt of this today?
Eugene to Portland.
I know that Bill London was writing me this morning. He was saying, boy, they're talking about a golf ball or half inch or larger hail in Eugene.
Oh, no,
right?
There's still potential. Last night, and we went over this in that special live, 2 to 2.5 in diameter hailstones coming out of the sky in the Willamette Valley.
Whoa, boy, it'll be great to be a body repair shop then, if your car's outside with that stuff going on.
This is the kind of stuff people watch Reed Timmer all the time, just to see his vehicles get destroyed by hail.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to be Reed Timmer and punch a hail core. I'm not that dumb.
All right. So what are we looking at here? Nah. So it's really bad the farther up the I-5 corridor you get, from the way it sounds here. Are we looking for just heavy wind and rain? Or because predicting the microclimate of Southern Oregon is very challenging. Very challenging.
It doesn't matter a whole lot on microclimate. What we're going to be watching for is any kind of really well-developed thunderstorm. I doubt we'll see supercells. They will see supercells in the Willamette Valley and then north into Washington today. I have no doubt about that. And the difference is a supercell starts rotating on the dominant updraft, and that's the one that you get the
tornado kind of look.
As gorilla hail.
Well, isn't that also that with that rotation, the ability to develop tornadoes over time?
That's what I just said. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the one that we're watching for to create tornadoes. Down here in our area, Medford, Grants Pass, we're looking for potential for a really strongly developed storm to rapidly escalate to severe level, and we could be looking for winds out of that type of a storm, 50 to 65 miles an hour, and hail an inch to an inch and a half in diameter.
And that's why Pacific Power is talking about, hey, we got our crews ready. We figure there's going to be outages, and most likely just due to wind outages and lines down, trees down.
Winds, trees start coming down. I mean, you start stacking all these different things. Oh, in addition, outside of whatever the storms may do, we have a wind advisory in effect in Jackson County. Hold on, I'm going to pull the exact bulletin here, because now there's a whole stack of bulletins. I mean, this is truly Midwest-level-looking stuff. So for Jackson County, includes cities of Ashland, Medford, wind advisory in effect from 11 this morning to 8 p.m. this evening, south wind sustaining 20 to 30 miles an hour, gusts to 45 are expected. This is predominantly expected to be Medford south to Ashland. This will include the East Hills area in Medford. That's actually where I think the strongest winds are going to get seen because of the funneling effect that happens coming around Baldy and then racing up north along those slopes on Roxy Ann. So,
what is it like out on the coast? Is it any different on the coast?
Whatever will happen with the storms.
Okay, Greg, is there any difference on the coast? Do we know? What do you say?
Hang on one second. I want to back up and look at the overall threat map. The coast, not in our area.
Okay.
It looks like just, you know, quote-unquote general thunderstorms expected. But once you reach the central coast of Oregon, going north basically to the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, there is a chance for severe storms now this morning extending out to the coast. And I would say that's an area that we could see waterspouts developing offshore and then move up on land, which would turn them into tornadoes.
All right. Better days to not go. Well, better days to fish than today. All right. Hey, Greg, I actually need to go up to Nugget, and I was going to refill the generator today because the weather looked like it was going to be okay for a while. If I did it early, I'm probably all right. Skedaddle up and get up. Right?
I would say if you do it before 2 p.m., you're going to be fine.
Okay, good. So it's going to be later this afternoon as we get into night. It's showtime then, really. All right?
Yeah, the prime witching hours, which you almost always see happen back east as well, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. west of the Cascades, east of the Cascades, where there is still major potential for damaging winds to occur, that's going to be 5 to 8 p.m. this evening.
All right, very good. Appreciate the call there from Rogue Weather. Let me grab a call for you. I think they want to talk to you. Hi, good morning. You're with Mr. Outdoors, Greg Roberts at Rogue Weather. Who's this?
This is Randy.
Hey,
I saw a tornado attempting to set up in Albany years ago. It never touched down, but it was pretty spooky. I got photos of it.
Yeah, and the Willamette Valley is a tornado zone here in Oregon. We have two major ones, the Willamette Valley and also out on the coast, which might sound like, how in the world the coast with tornadoes? But the scenario would be a very severe thunderstorm forms out over the water. It starts rotating. It drops what is considered a water spout, but then it moves on shore, and the water spout becomes a tornado when it moves on shore.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And those will last varying amounts of time, pretty typically 10 to 15 minutes. But when they arrive, they can do some damage. And Curry County, here in southern Oregon, I can find documentation of at least three tornadoes in Curry County, that's exactly how they began. They started as a water spout over the open ocean and then moved on shore.
All right. Hey, Randy, appreciate the call on that. Mr. Outdoors, I appreciate your take. Of course, we'll have you back on Friday and certainly talk more about what things are looking like heading into that weekend. All right. RogueWeather.com, and today is showtime definitely for you. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Hey, Greg, take care. Thanks for the tips, okay? All right. It's 7:52 at KMED. We have some breaking news here. Supreme Court, now, this is from New York Times. I don't have a lot of details on it because the rest of it's behind a paywall here. But the Supreme Court has upheld the Biden administration's limit on ghost guns. Remember, they put the regulation, they had tightened up regulations to curtail access to kits that can be easily assembled into homemade firearms. Of course, we've had homemade firearms since the beginning, so that has been ruled legal. Whether the Trump administration will repeal that, we don't know. Okay, but that was coming from the Biden administration. Also, and once again, consider the source, but it's still breaking news out of the New York Times, Trump administration to end vaccine funds for poor countries. Document obtained by the Times shows the extraordinary scale and reach of the slashed spending of USAID support for efforts to combine malaria or to combat malaria, one of the biggest killers globally. It'll also be significantly scaled back. Yes, yes, yes. In other words, keep the status quo. Keep the money going to the NGOs, right, New York Times? This is the Bill Meyer Show.
If you're considering a new garage door or opener for a new home or
Bill Meyer Show.
Doing my best to keep you informed about the nonsense, which sometimes passes as news. All right. And before I head back to the phones, which, by the way, we do have some open phone time here. Mark Hutto is going to join me. We're going to talk gold, silver, and also interesting battles with Jackson County Planning. Oh, boy, that could be... We talk about a rabbit hole there, huh? Anytime you're dealing with county planning these days in the state of Oregon, but we'll have some of that. But I couldn't help but notice in Attorney General Dan Rayfield, when he's not filing lawsuits against the Trump administration, saying, we are going to resist! We are going to continue! But anyway, he did issue a consumer alert in Oregon because 23andMe has announced that it will file for bankruptcy. Now, that is the DNA testing kit. People, you know, would go this, you give them some spit, and they would tell you that whatever you thought was going to be your your genetic background or your family background, it's not close. I don't know. But it's kind of weird, some of the stories that you would hear here. And so 23andMe has been going downhill financially for a number of years. And so it's going to sell practically all of its assets through a reorganization plan. All right. Now, what Rayfield is doing, he's put out a guide to help you protect your data here. And Dan Rayfield says 23andMe must work to safeguard this incredibly sensitive genetic information, regardless of their bankruptcy filing. You know, I'm just smiling and laughing when I see at this entire thing. And yeah, he says you can go there and you can have your information pulled off the site. And there's nothing wrong. You know, he's telling people how they can go there. And I never took the bait. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, all right, you are going to give your personal information and your DNA in a world in which they're talking about bioweapons and vaccines that can be created individually to look at particular genome patterns or gene patterns, right? And Americans, kind of like the cell phone thing, kind of like the Signal app, just volunteer to give it all the way. It just astounded me. And yet, you know, hey, there's a part of me, you know, the only way that I wanted to do a genetic scan or a genetic test was that I was willing to do it if it was a completely private lab and the information wasn't sold. Well, the whole purpose of all of these genetic labs is to sell the information for research. That's the only purpose really for it. It's not to help you figure out if your family came from Africa or from Poland or whatever it is. It's so ultimately it gets used for medical research. And of course, anything that's for medical research could be biomedical weaponing research too. But, you know, and there's, that's okay. Dan Rayfield's going to stop us. I think he's full of nonsense, but I guess you could feel a lot better if you went down the 23andMe thing to, yeah, have your information removed from the site. And of course, there would be no backup copies kept anywhere, right? You know, you couldn't see the thing where there's a nice big fat thumb drive of genetic information that just finds its way into a Wuhan lab at some point. Well, you know, my job is to notice things and figure, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen from the nonsense that is our world today? Let me go to Wild Salmon Steve. Hello, Steve. How you doing this morning? By the way, this is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. What's on your mind today, Steve?
Hey, a couple things. One is it sounds like that Signal App thing was exactly what they did to Mike Flynn. They put it on the computer, and it was a honey trap. They found that they were using it.
Now, can you use the Signal app on a computer, or I thought it was a phone app only. I could be wrong. I didn't look that deeply.
Walt said it was on his computer, so I that's all I know.
Oh, okay, so there must be a desktop application then for Signal, apparently.
Yeah. So they put it on there just hoping that they would use it, and, you know, the deep state is the deep state, and that was just my thought on that. Now,
okay.
The other thing is turbochargers. Turbochargers are very complex devices, though simple.
We were talking about that last hour with Eric Peters. Yeah. He was talking about this this push for tiny, tiny engines, and then you put three turbochargers on it, and then they blow up, right?
Okay. Well, turbochargers use sleeve bearings, and they have exhaust gas going through them. And the exhaust gas from a gasoline engine is actually higher temperature than a diesel engine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a turbocharger, you want to pay particular attention to changing your oil.
Agreed.
Especially after you've worked it hard.
And the other thing is when you stop after some high-speed driving, let your engine idle a little bit to allow the bearings to cool. Yeah, so you don't want to just come to a big stop and then all of a sudden you've been doing 75 miles an hour on I-5. I know the limit's 65, but still. You slow down, you stop, let it idle a little bit, let it cool, and change your oil more often than you think is necessary because if they're saying you can change it every 5,000, I would change it still 4. If they're saying 7, I would say 5, you know?
Cool it off. We used to put timers on the heavy equipment at the mill.
Mm-hmm.
So the operator would come to the end of the shift. They would turn off the fuel, but they would turn on this timer and would let the engine idle for 5 or 10 minutes before it shut down. And that way we didn't have to pay the operator to sit there to let it cool down, but it saved a lot of trouble. I put a turbocharger on a pickup that I had way back in the 70s, and I had all kinds of problems. The turbocharger oil discharge went into the valve cover, and it burned up the valve guide seals.
Oh, jeez. So, well, yeah, because you had hot oil coming out of the turbocharger, and then it's going into a very sensitive valve train. Yeah, you wanted cooled air. You wanted cool oil going to the valves, right?
Yeah. Actually made a bypass and ran it into the oil pan, and that worked a lot better. But, you know, Buick made turbochargers. They put in their Skylarks, and they were very popular in the 1960s because the big block engines weren't there.
And the turbochargers, though, are now being used as not an enhancement but a replacement for displacement. And that's where I think we've been going wrong here. Eric, and we've all been talking about that with Eric for quite some time. And that's why I was bringing it up, you know, this whole idea of the 1.3-liter three-cylinder engine that seems to be the rise in going into so many of these crossover SUVs. You got a tiny engine. That is a well-engineered engine. I'm not saying it's a bad engine, but you're taking that and then you're putting 10 pounds of turbo boost into it and making it do the job of what a V6 or a V8 used to do. There's going to be a cost for that. There's just a cost for it. It's not free to do that. All right.
If you double atmospheric pressure, you get 60% increase in power.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to a 14-pound boost of above atmospheric pressure, you should, you know, take a 300 horsepower engine and make a 450 horsepower engine.
Which also means that the strain on the 300 horsepower engine normally then increases commensurately.
Oh.
All right, that's all.
Yeah, the rods and bearings and the problem I had was when they took the lead out of the gasoline, I couldn't keep it from detonating under pressure.
Oh yeah, absolutely right. I don't doubt about that. Thanks for the turbo lessons here, though, Steve.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
All right. 4 after 8, we'll catch up on the rest of things going on here. So we sort of meander around back into the news. Hey, gold, silver, crazy pricing, huh? What's the story? We'll talk with Mark Hutto from Jay Austin about that. And he also wants to share some experiences of his work with Jackson County Planning. Oh, boy.
We've heard it all.
That ditch was way too...